the year. The first cabinet for 2015 will be on 27th of Jan. National Party will have its annual full-day caucus meeting at Premier House on the 3rd of February. Looking ahead to the beginning of next year, one of the things we've obviously been putting our mind to is co-hosting the Cricket World Cup, which we're co-hosting obviously with Australia. The opening match will be against Sri Lanka at the recently reopened Hagley Oval in Christchurch on Valentine's Day, the 14th of February. It's obviously a major event that will see 40 matches played over 44 days at venues both here in New Zealand and Australia. We're expecting 30,000 visitor arrivals for the events, which will obviously have a positive spin-off for the business. Just from an education perspective, you've seen Hehe Parata's announcement today, I have no doubt. I'm proud to say that under this government, children are starting school earlier, staying longer and leaving better qualified. As you know, earlier this year I announced a $359 million plan to raise achievement through recognising excellent teachers and principals. This policy keeps good teachers in the classroom and sharing expertise across the schools for the benefit of all children. Today, as part of that initiative, we announced the first communities of schools, which will begin from Term 1 next year. These communities which set achievement goals and share expertise in teaching and in leadership. This is a big win for our kids because schools will be working together in a way that they haven't done so before. Just in terms of the House, on Tuesday we go into urgency to progress the Countering Terrorist Fighters Legislation Bill, and on Wednesday the House will hold an extended sitting for the third reading of the two treaty settlement bills from the adjournment debate in the afternoon. Of course, the House will rise on Wednesday afternoon, which just happens to be in time for the press gallery party, and after the Christmas break we'll resume on the 10th of February. In terms of my own activities, I'm in the House of Christian Time today and tomorrow, as you'd expect. I'll be attending the annual Waipa River Iwi Forum for most of the day on Thursday. Friday, I'm going to be meetings and events in Auckland. Next week, I'm in Auckland, Christchurch, and Queenstown. So that's about it, other than to wish you all a very Merry Christmas and see you next year. Questions? What can the government do for Anthony Dinamon, who has been arrested in Bali? Well, we'll obviously continue to provide him conscious support and make sure he is getting the right legal support, which will be provided to him, I'm sure, not by taxpayers necessarily. But outside of that, we'll just have to see how things progress.
Will you be sending a message to the Indonesian president that you don't support the death penalty?
That's a no. In fact, I think the New Zealand government doesn't support the death penalty. If it looks as if that's how it's going to progress, then obviously we'd make that very clear to the Indonesian president, but let's see how things play out.
What happens if he can't afford legal representation? Does the New Zealand government
help him with it? I don't have advice on that. I'd have to go and check for you. Historically, we've always had people having support, so somewhere along the line there must be some sort of legal aid, but I imagine there's a provision somewhere along the line.
His family raised concerns with the police. Should the police have done more than try to stop them?
Again, I don't have any details on that. I've seen the sort of media reporting on the case, and the thing is before the courts. I mean, in the end, his legal counsel will have to make those arguments for the courts, and we'll see the veracity of them. I have to go and check the REM authority. I mean, I know normally they put out their announcement often at this time of year, but I can't recall what that is, so I have to go and check if they're due to make the announcement.
We saw a major traffic snarl up Northland on the weekend. Does that show the need for a second harbour crossing sooner than you expect?
I don't think necessarily sooner. I mean, it sounded like it was a bit of a sort of freak accident. I mean, think about the number of cars and motorbikes and trucks that travel over the Auckland Harbour Bridge and how infrequently it's beset by the sort of problems that we saw on Saturday afternoon. For the most part, it works well, and traffic management there is good. But obviously, at some point, another alternative harbour crossing is required. It's a big ticket item. I think I flagged that in my speech last year when I talked about the CBD rail tunnel. I think the government's view is that that should be a tunnel, and it's in the order of billions and billions of dollars. But I don't think you'd just start building that tomorrow because there was an accident on Saturday afternoon.
So I'm not okay to push that.
No plans to change at this point.
Is the government considering any aid for the Philippines?
We haven't had any requests for that at this point, and we'll obviously continue to assess things, and on the basis that something's required, we might do, but at this point, there's been no.
Has there been any further discussions between National and New Zealand First Foreign Fighters Bill?
Well, as far as I'm aware, I know they were getting briefings that they wanted, them, but I can't recall any discussion.
Their position last week was that there'd have to be further changes for them to support the bill.
has identified the tax as a big issue that wants to look at her tax review. I believe that the government needs to broaden its tax base, look at ways to make the tax system fairer around capital and income and those sorts of things. Do you agree that there is a problem with the New Zealand tax system?
Generally, no. And actually, if you look at the international peer reviews of our tax system, it comes up pretty well. I mean, it's a broad-based low rate. One of the great things about our tax system is that we don't have all of the deductions that you see in other parts of the world. So, yes, we have a higher, for instance, company tax rate than some countries and lower than others. But overall, if you look at our tax system, the good thing about it is it is that low rate and broad base. The GST applies to everything. Company tax rate, in my view, is about fair. It doesn't have too many deductions. And the personal tax rate is... I think set in the right place to encourage work and saving. There'll always be an argument about potentially taxing capital more, but we've done a fair bit in that space already around the changes to the deductions around depreciation, for instance, of rental properties. I mean, in the end, if you go back and think about that, the tax review that took place under us very early on, they did talk about a land tax, and I said Labor removing the idea of a land tax. That's a pretty difficult tax to sell to people. I think, you know, in the end, it has a big impact on those who are on fixed incomes. Could definitely force people who have a low level of income but a higher asset out of their property, particularly older retired New Zealanders. So there's quite a lot of challenges there.
What about the issue with the GST on online purchases, so Google, Facebook, those sorts of, you know, the fact that we're missing out on that tax revenue?
We'd agree with that, but that's part of an OECD review, and the only way I think that we'll realistically be able to tax that revenue more efficiently is when kind of everyone holds hands and addresses that problem together. So the government is worried about that issue because we can see the slippage that's taking place, and it is unfair, I think, that you can buy online something that you're not paying GST, which if you went to the retailer down the road, you would. The challenge always is around the administration of all of that. So our minimum threshold set at $400 from memory. If we were to set that at a much lower rate, then we could catch more of it, but it has a big administration cost for New Zealanders. Equally, you know, countries like Australia have it set at a higher rate. So that is the work that the OECD is certainly looking at from their tax working group, is to look at, you know, where these big multinationals like the Facebooks actually pay tax and how we can deal with the new online world, because it's an issue for everybody.
Would you go down the route that Britain announced last week of a Google tax, a 25% tax on profits generated in Britain?
We don't have any advice on that. What the Minister of Revenue is doing, as I understand, has been participating in those OECD working groups or group head representatives. So we're going to wait to get a little bit more advice and we'll come back and have a look at that. I mean, in theory, there are lots of ways you could change your taxation for some of these multinationals, but it would require a significant change to the way you tax. So you can't just tax by name. I mean, you can't just say Google or Facebook have to pay this level of tax. So if you get into some sort of turnover tax or something like that, that's quite a radical change to your tax system. And it could have unintended consequences that you're just not sure of.
Just on the territory
legislation,
do you plan to get all the remaining stages through tomorrow?
Yeah, well, it'll depend on how quickly we can go through the House, but certainly we'll have to pass the legislation by the end of the year. It's possible we'll get through by 10 o'clock on Tuesday night, but also possible we'll have to look at it on Wednesday.
Are you concerned about signs of a second wind in the Auckland housing market?
I don't know. I think, I saw the numbers from Buffett and Thompson last week that there'd been this, you know, reasonably substantial increase, $20,000 since the election. There's a few things there. I mean, sometimes with that housing data, you just have to be careful. For instance, you could have had a lot of expensive homes sold in that time, so it throws around the averages. What you do know is elections are bad for the economy. Typically, consumers stop buying and businesses stop economic activity in the month or two prior to the elections. They wait to see what actually happened with the result. And given there was quite a significant change in tax policy between the Labor opposition and ourselves, it's hardly surprising that some people were waiting to see. But it's also true, for instance, the car dealers have been telling me they've been very busy post the election, were quite quiet for a couple of months prior.
Some economists are saying that the Reserve Bank should bring in another macroprudential tool to try and cool down the Auckland market. What's your view on that?
Well, we'll see how well received the last one was, but in the end, you know, the whole purpose of giving the Reserve Bank Governor some more latitude is to allow him to potentially try and arrest the rise of the housing market without disturbing the rest of the economy, if that's at all possible. So in the end, we'd always listen to what he has to say, and he has his own authority. I haven't seen any other suggested tools. You might talk to the Minister of Finance about it, but to me.
So what do you think of the anecdote evidence that banks are not lending to older borrowers because, you know, they just want to clamp down there, they feel like people may not pay the loans back in time?
I haven't seen that. Is that in terms of housing or?
Yeah, residential housing, that, you know, people who are older may not be able to get mortgages.
It's always an issue for the banks, because one of the things they look at is your capacity to repay, obviously, and that's dependent on your income. So if potentially your own income is New Zealand surplus, then that will reduce the amount that banks will lend. As a general rule, they've been a bit more supportive of lending on housing anyway, just simply because of the underlying asset, but I haven't actually seen that report.
What about a foreign buyer's register? There was someone over the weekend from Dubai who said we can expect 15 to 20% more Chinese buying in this market.
Well, it's all anecdotal at the moment, but what the Minister of Finance said last week, as I've read his public comments correctly, was that Australia's doing a bit of work on a register of some sort. What he's saying is, let's see how that goes. There's a credible register, we're not afraid of having such a thing. We're just saying we don't think that's really the answer to the issues. And all the register would give you is arguably a bit better information on what's happening. And that might be of merit, but realistically for us, tackling the housing issue, which we're doing, I think, very effectively, still sits in that issue of release of land and speeding up the supply of new product.
Did you speak to President Xi about residential property investment? I mean, you talked about there being more room for Chinese investment. Is residential property off limits there?
Not residential, but we continue to sort of make the case that we think investment in New Zealand out of China is a good thing if it's going to the productive sector and creating jobs, and we're a little more hesitant about it if it's simply going into land.
What about housing? I mean, are you not worried that if there's a whole bunch of capital in China looking for a return, that's looking at the Auckland housing market, it's looking pretty attractive?
Yeah, I think, I still think if you look at who's buying those properties at the moment, I think the vast overwhelming bulk of people buying them in Auckland are New Zealand residents or New Zealand citizens. Now, that pattern could change over time. I accept that, you know, as China gets wealthier and as other countries get wealthier, they may look to spread their wings a bit more, and that's an issue that New Zealand, like every other country, has to consider both the pros and cons of that, because there's a bit both ways. But I think at the moment, people overestimate the amount of buyers who are actually non-resident in New Zealand. There are clearly some, without doubt, there are clearly some, but I don't think it's the overwhelming bulk. I mean, 39% of Auckland, people who live in Auckland, were not born in New Zealand. You know, it's 4 out of 10 people probably weren't born in New Zealand. So some people will turn up to an auction and see a Chinese bidder and assume that they live in Beijing or Shanghai or Guangzhou. Actually, they probably live in Pakuranga or Torbay.
Did President Xi ask for New Zealand's help to track down officials who maybe brought money to New Zealand or brought assets here, which perhaps shouldn't have?
Yep, he did raise the broader issue of concerns that the Chinese have about nationals that may come to a country like New Zealand and other countries around the world with the proceeds of money that he would claim is not theirs and is from corrupt activities. Ultimately, as I said to him, we do the very best that we can when someone comes to New Zealand to ensure that those funds are legitimate, but it's a difficult exercise for us.
Did he talk about specific cases?
Not specifically in terms of an individual case itself, but the broad category. Yeah, he indicated that he thought there were a few people they thought they were in New Zealand. I mean, for quite some time they've been looking at extradition treaties and the likes. We don't have an extradition treaty with China. One of the reasons we don't have that is because China has the death penalty. But they have been signing extradition treaties up around the world and excluding the death penalty and torture from those people that would be returned. So,
did he ask you to sign an extradition treaty?
Well, I certainly keen to be able to get a few people back from New Zealand. But at this point, I'm not aware of formal cases, with the exception of one. And the one formal case that I'm aware of is not related to inappropriate gain of funds. It's a completely different issue.
What's it related to?
Oh, it's I'm not sure how much detail I can go into, but it's a case about inappropriate sexual behaviour.
If they excluded the death penalty, would you be open to the idea of an extradition treaty reform?
Well, it's something that we're going to stop discussions if, you know, MFAT and the officials in China want to have those discussions. I mean, it's something that gets raised just like we raise with a variety of other issues, but we'd have to have a high degree of confidence that our conditions could be met.
How much of an issue is that?
How far through those discussions?
Oh, I think it's very much in its preliminary stage. It's just an issue that they've raised with us before, and they continue to raise as an issue. I mean, that if you think about President Xi, I mean, one of the major things he's been trying to do is clamp down on the censure of corruption and the corrupt activities and people using the proceeds of that activity. And so one of the things they're concerned about is people that flee the country with those resources.
So
you're not opposed to where things...
We'd have to meet the conditions that New Zealand would be happy with from a human rights perspective.
So President Xi believes there are several economic fugitives in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Can you give you an idea of the scale of what they...
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty not sure I can say the number,
Didn't you ask that help, though?
Well, I knew them so much that they are very keen to progress in extradition, really, but...
Do you get nothing for them?
No, well... Look, in the end, I mean, he didn't get into specific names, and I could always sort of guess names about one or two high-profile people, but you're never really quite sure. I mean, in the end, with all of this sort of stuff, as I said, you know, when we admit someone to New Zealand, we do I understand immigration to their best to understand where the resources that they're bringing to New Zealand come from and the legitimacy of that. But it's always a challenging issue for our officials to work our way through that.
Is money laundering through the New Zealand residential property market an issue?
I don't think that's where they see the issue. I don't think that's where we see the issue. I think it's more people that might leave China or leave other countries with proceeds of effectively from ill-gotten gains.
We talk about a handful of people here, two, three, ten, twenty. What sort of numbers?
Well, it's in a range which is, I'm not really sure I can tell you exactly, but it's a reasonable number that they believe may be in New Zealand from those kind of resources.
And you could get names, obviously, via the Chinese government, official, at an official list. Yeah, he didn't give you names,
If we went after it, we could, yeah, but. But in the end, that's their perspective on those individuals and where they believe the money's come from.
So you're fairly comfortable that the money's not being laundered in the residential property market by these people?
I think you're conflating two different issues. One is whether there's Chinese investment, which is just legitimate resources, but nevertheless, whether Chinese nationals have an interest in potentially buying a house overseas. They might have that motivation for a million different reasons, that they want to do that. Between someone who might come to New Zealand with resources that we believe are legitimate, but the Chinese authorities might question. They're slightly different issues, I think.
Sure, but the people who are coming here with money that the Chinese feel is illegitimately gained, what are they doing with it? Are they investing it here? Are they trying to work it?
No, I can't answer that question.
One obvious example is Bill Blue, isn't it?
Well, they're your words, not mine. I'm just saying I could have it if you don't know the names, but I'm just simply telling you that as a category, that is one of the concerns that they have.
But so does the Chinese government actually say what they think is happening with this money?
No, it gets not. Really.
They say that they're coming here with that money.
There seems to be
some
people.
So are there some problems with our immigration system as these people are coming through, and is there anything, is China been giving you adequate information to vet these people?
I can't tell you exactly the process that Immigration New Zealand go through, but they'll go through a process of looking at that. But there's a range of they'll obviously have a range of views about individuals, and if there was a legitimate, reasonable, we could meet all the conditions. You don't necessarily need an extradition treaty to extradite somebody on the basis that you believe that they need to face genuine criminal charges. Their home country, and in the case of a particular individual I talked about earlier, it's probably more than likely that person will be returned to China. It's in a different category, We're obviously working our way through making sure that we are comfortable that the human right conditions that will put around the return of that individual will be met.
Would one of the points be, would this like that, like doing the sort of like these people they think they are diligent to make money, but which we think were just pocket money?
That might be true. I don't know. It's very difficult for us to judge it. I mean, I'm just simply reflecting on what he said to me.
Is this part of incarcerated?
I think so, but I can't be 100% sure.
This is a person wanted on some sexual
thing. Yes.
Is this part of the Operation Fox Hunt program, which the Chinese government is running?
Don't know the title of this program.
Prime Minister, there's a report on Friday based on documents obtained by Edward Snowden alleging that the NSA operated a campaign to compromise mobile networks around the world, and this material there suggesting they have done so with regards to New Zealand. Something like 42% of networks in New Zealand may have been compromised. Are you able to offer New Zealanders an assurance that the NSA has not essentially hacked into mobile networks in New Zealand and to access to New Zealand as
well? Well, I didn't see the report on Friday, and I haven't seen any reports of each. Really surprised. I don't think that's likely, but I'd have to go and check that.
Are you concerned at all about illegal tooth fishing in Antarctica?
Yes, we always have concerns that we see reported illegal activity, and where we can, we do our bit to monitor that as part of the Camelot, group of countries.
The sea shepherd, the Sam Simons, just left to fight the poachers, and they've got three Kiwis on board. Would you offer them any assistance if they did manage to track a ship down?
Well, we prefer that they didn't try and undertake that activity. I think it should be left to the authorities. I mean, they're arguably not in the position to actually do anything about that. They don't have the legal authority. I mean, that's they're part of an NGO, and the legal authority to actually do something. It's very much like whaling. We think there's a better way of dealing with that issue than on-seat confrontation.
Did you read the Sunday Times
on the weekend? Yeah, of course I read the Sunday Star Times from cover to cover. I mean, it's actually happy to see them do that.
Are you happy with her writing
the column? Did she write? It was terribly, when I say terribly, terribly confused. The front page of the paper said she was a columnist, and the only thing I could see in the edition I saw was the column written by Adam Dunn. Did she write the column?
She did write it. Okay.
Not the edition I saw.
It was about Jeff Ford.
Was it?
So you didn't
finish
your column then?
Yeah, no. Wasn't it? Well, okay, I had a really good look because it said it was on P3 on the front page, I thought, and I couldn't see anything. Tonight? Oh, I'm going to the Canterbury Westland Christmas party. I'm going to go down to thank our supporters and do. I did Palmerston North yesterday and CNI on Friday.
And what do you think about Almighty God and Jesus Christ being taken out of the prayer?
Well, I think our view in the National Party Caucus was the prayer should just be left as it was.
What's your view?
I think I'd prefer it was left as it was. I mean, as people know, I'm not a deeply religious person. I hardly ever go to church for this particular reason. But I think my preference would be just to leave it as it was.
If the Speaker decides to change it, will you challenge it?
We put in a submission on the overall, on a number of topics, but on that, and our argument has been should be left as status quo.
The Sustainability Council says New Zealand should be in for a climate change bill.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many assumptions built into that. I mean, there's assumptions around what the price of carbon might be, what we ultimately might do to mitigate it, what New Zealand's long-term target might be. So, I mean, my view of these things is that we're going through the right process. We've got Tim Grosser representing us at Lima. That's a precursor, as I can see, for the meeting that will be held in Paris next year. The Minister's working on a submission to take to Cabinet in the early part of next year for us to be able to look at what our recommended target reduction should be for Paris. And I think, realistically, until we settle on that, all of these things are sort of pie-in-the-sky numbers, which are in a massive range. I mean, I think even on their numbers, they were talking about 3 billion to 52 billion. I mean, they're just a huge range, which is so laden with assumptions, which I don't think will be right in the end.
In terms of reducing New Zealand's emissions, do you think we have to include agriculture in the ETS?
Well, my view of bringing agriculture into the ETS is I'm totally comfortable in doing that. if there's a legitimate way of the farmers actually reducing their emissions. And if we don't do that, then we're just putting another tax on them for the sake of taxing them. I don't think that's fair on farmers. They have to operate in a globally competitive world on an unsubsidised basis. And to reduce farming activity in New Zealand, I only see that pop up in Latin America or somewhere else, doesn't actually help the planet. So in my view, the right way through, rather than fixating about the ETS actually for farmers, because they already pay for that partly through the additives like petrol and diesel, is actually to find a scientific solution for them. That's why, really, for the last 5 years, we've been big proponents of the Global Greenhouse Gas Alliance.
Has it had the impacts that you've been hoping for?
It's got hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars of pledges, and it's been doing a lot of scientific research, and I think in the end it will find the solutions. As you know, DCD was a sort of precursor to as a nitrate inhibitor, and I think that's a good example of you know, unfortunately, it had different consequences, but it was certainly heading in the right direction. I'm actually extremely confident that science will provide us a solution to agricultural emissions. As time goes on, we have a better understanding of the impact of methane and nitrate emissions and some of the things we can do to mitigate that. Okay, we've got any questions? Thank you.